Welcome back to Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, the Fan Simulcast on Sportsnet. Eric Smith in for Bob McCowan. Bobcat hopefully back next week. Friday roundtable on the air as we're keeping you company during the drive on the Friday of the long weekend. Mike Zeisberger of the Toronto Sun, Arash Madani from Sportsnet, John Shannon of Sportsnet. As John just said to me, it's not the NHL playoffs, it's the Stanley Cup playoffs.
That's right. Thank you.
So we'll get it right. It's the Stanley Cup playoffs. And how about, then I'll start with you, John. Last night, as much as you've hated talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs, their meltdown in Game 7, or at least the Bruins' comeback, somewhat similar, not exactly the exact same drama of Game 7, but last night with the Los Angeles Kings and what they did to San Jose.
Absolutely shocking when you consider that, you know, Brad Stewart takes a penalty, Mark-Edward Vlasic takes a penalty, and all of a sudden the LA Kings are 5-on-3, down 3-2, and before you know it, not only have they scored one, but they've scored two, and they win the game in regulation. It was mind-boggling, and in many ways you have to wonder if the San Jose Sharks can actually recover from this one. Although they are going home, they're going to the toughest arena to play in the NHL for the visitors. The Sharks only lost two games in regulation all season at home, so it'll be a tough battle, but I hate to say it, but the Kings are rounding into form at the exact right time, aren't they?
They really are. And that, you know, you brought up it's the hardest arena to go into in the HP Pavilion in San Jose, but you're also looking at a Los Angeles Kings team that, if I'm not mistaken, I think that they had home ice advantage in this series. Was the first series that the Kings have had home ice advantage since 1992.
That's so, right.
And that just shows a team that no matter where you put them, especially last year and into the first round of this year, this team finds a way to grind it out. And I just think that San Jose blew a huge opportunity. And even when they allowed you allow a 5-on-3 goal. Okay, so then it's 5-on-4. But their defensive zone coverage off the faceoff, it was, for the winning goal, was just brutal. Just brutal.
And when you consider who is actually running their defense, it's a guy named Larry Robinson.
Yeah.
And Larry has done marvelous things for that organization this year. For them to break down as quickly as they did, you were sitting there in front of the television. You could actually sense that, you know what, they're going to score again. They are going to score again.
You know what, John? It was kind of like after the Bruins made it 4-3 the other night.
Maybe you're right.
And it took within, 20, 30 seconds? Mm-hmm. And it's the same. Now, granted, the Bruins pulled their goalie after that, but and we're not on the power play. But still, it was the same. It was a clean faceoff win by the team that had just scored the goal. And it was just like there was no resistance. None.
Have the Bruins completely woken up now? I mean, that was a heck of a win last night. You would have thought there'd be a little bit of a dip afterwards.
Well, to quote the always quotable John Tortorella, in overtime, we got, quote, spanked, unquote.
Boy, did they. What was it? 16-4, I think, were the shots.
Yeah.
This was the expectation I think a lot of us had of the Boston Bruins, not just in the playoffs, but through much of the regular season. You know,
especially after their start.
Well, we broke down the NHL season to two teams in the West, Chicago and Anaheim, arguably, and two teams in the East, Pittsburgh and Boston. And then whoever's going to come out, and we'll probably end up with one of those four teams, or two of those four teams playing for the Stanley Cup championship. And Anaheim, you know, they, you know, met their own fate. But at the same time, there was no way late in the season, even that Sunday night when they lost to Ottawa, to change the home ice situation. You wonder where the Bruins were. I mean, they were as Claude Julien called them, they were Jekyll and Hyde all season.
Right.
But Monday night, and then again last night at appropriate times. Thank goodness that game occurred last night, because that for the first four games of the second round, at least that one created some entertainment. And the LA San Jose one backed it up, but finally we had some entertainment in the second round of the playoffs.
In a lot of ways, this Bruins team reminds me of the team of 2 years ago.
Yeah.
That had to get to Game 7 in the first round with their embattled coach, kind of, if he loses, is he on the hot seat? Is he on his way out? There are a lot of questions about, are they going to blow up this team if they don't get it done?
Yeah.
It's almost like it's following the same script so far. Miles to go, though.
Arash and I talked about this before the show, but, I mean, a lot of people forget that in the first round 2 years ago, the Bruins had to go into overtime to beat the Habs.
Nathan Hartman, to get out.
Yeah, and I think is the stat something like six of the last seven series the Bruins have been in have gone to seven games? So they don't seem to do things easy.
No.
That's for sure.
No.
And you can see that on Claude Julien's face.
And the other side of the Bruins situation is that there was no Seidenberg last night.
Yep.
No Andrew Ferentz last night. No Wade Redden. And I'm not downplaying Wade Redden's role, but you know if Claude Julien has a chance to play a veteran over a first or a second year player, he's going to play the veteran. And Bartkowski played a great game. Krug played a great game.
Yep.
And Dougie Hamilton was a solid 21 minutes last night as well. So all of a sudden these... And this is what drives other managers nuts. I mean, I could see Dave Nonis watching last night just being driven nuts because he just wants his kids to have experience.
Right.
That's what every manager wants. He wants, why can't my young guys get to the second round and learn how to play at this level of hockey? And you know what? The rich get richer. The Boston Bruins now have three young kids. Now, they're not out of the woods yet, but three kids who have dipped their toe in the water of second round hockey, played very well, didn't make any stupid mistakes, and they're just better for it. And Seidenberg, Ferentz, and Redden are all supposed to come back before the series is over.
Yeah, I think.
What do you think though, John, about people in Calgary when they look at excuse me if I pronounce it wrong, but Bartkowski kid who was, you know, everybody thought pretty much, including Peter Chiarelli, thought that deal would be done. And that was going to be one of the prospects that was going back to Calgary.
How much does momentum matter in the postseason?
Momentum?
And the reason I ask that, a lot of times it gets sort of brushed aside in the regular season, a three-game winning streak, a four-game, whatever. But in the playoffs, you look at a team like Boston. They look down and out game 5 and 6 against the Leafs, have a terrible start to game 7, a miraculous comeback. Then they're facing a goalie in the first round against the Rangers. We talked to Eddie Olchuk yesterday. Two straight shutouts for Lundqvist coming into game 1. Now they've won two dramatic games in overtime. They're up in the series now in round 2, even with some young players playing key roles with key guys down and out. How much is momentum on their side in terms of what they're doing moving forward?
I'm not sure the way coaches coach now and the way they go back to the video room and take that extra day and try to, you know, change the system or change their system. I'm not sure momentum means anything anymore.
Yeah, I agree.
Also, when you consider too, it's not as if the Bruins and the Rangers are back at it tomorrow night.
Right.
They're going to wait another extra half day. They're going to play Sunday afternoon, and so by then, you know, Tortorella and Julien will be driving their own players nuts with what they've learned in practice and video breakdowns and. And the players just want to play the games, and the coaches will be trying to overcoach at that point. And the Leaf series was the best example. The punch counterpunch that both coaches
absolutely
and the adjustments you were there, Arash, yep. The adjustments that every time Julien did something, Carlisle did something, and I do think when you get, you know, guys like Tortorella and Julien, you're going to see that punch counterpunch constantly.
What was that game 2 where Kessel had the game-winning goal 3 or 4 minutes? Randy Carlisle found a way to have him on the ice when Chara wasn't.
The other thing last night, which we noted on our show, was that the Rangers were not physical on Zdeno Chara last night.
Right. No,
they let him kind of manage his game. You know, 38 minutes and 2 seconds last night. Whereas the Maple Leafs, I mean, they did not waste any opportunity to try to hit him. Now,
even Kessel.
Everyone. You're right. I mean, even the water boy. I mean, that was a big part of it. I think that really bothered Chara.
And it was very head-scratching last night in terms of the fact that, as you mentioned, 3 of the 6 Bruins defensemen were pretty much rookies. Yeah. And so you've only got 3 guys. You got McQuaid. You got Boychuk, who was getting battered all night. I mean, you know, he's going to become... a folk hero in Boston because they love guys that are like, you know, woozy and on the bench and they return out on the ice. But if you have such an experienced defense, wouldn't it be your game plan? Number one, more than anything, we got to hit Chara as much as possible.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, for a guy who coaches such a physical style in Tortorella, I think a lot of us were surprised that there wasn't a more physical play against the big guy. They did try to take it out on everybody else. They just really almost tried to avoid him.
Isn't and the other he thing incredible that, though, Chara?
Yeah. Oh,
wow. Isn't he just? I mean, he's on another level when you think about his conditioning and his physical fitness and his leadership and his toughness and just he's there. He is such a presence, and just never vanishes.
And should have been an Ottawa senator.
Right.
Should have stayed an Ottawa senator.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't like to remind people of that very often.
They chose Redden.
They chose Redden. And because doing the Redden contract first, Chara and his people got angry.
Well.
And Peter Chiarelli, who left Ottawa.
Right.
Yeah.
Made him his first
senator. And to put it in perspective, just to keep Eric in the loop here, on skates, Chara and Kevin Garnett are the same height.
You don't have to keep going. If you can be a hockey guy and be a basketball fan, why can't I know something about hockey despite the fact that I'm rooted in basketball? I've done this show for the last 2 days talking a lot of hockey. Come on, John.
Done an excellent job, too, Eric.
You're killing me here with this Kevin Garnett thing.
No, I was actually trying to do it for people. That was called a segue, but that's okay.
You said keeping Eric in the loop here.
Well, no, but we were kind of
I'm still trying to get over challenging balls and strikes.
Yeah. Well, here's something else to keep you in the loop,
throw
Eric.
A flag
okay.
On you.
Something else to keep you in the loop here. The other thing that I think that when you look at the Bruins has been, from the last 11 minutes of that Leaf game and last night, somebody woke up Milan Lucic.
Yeah.
And this is a guy that, don't wake up the sleeping bear. He's been asleep for a lot of the season. This guy was a healthy scratch at one point for the Boston Bruins. And there are shifts now where he just seems to be imposing his will on people. And it reminds me, you mentioned the 30-year anniversary in our previous segment of the Islanders winning their first cup. That's what they always used to say about Clark Gillies. Just leave him alone, okay? Just let him be passive and stuff. But if you peeve him off and he starts getting hungry, he can be a difference maker.
He came into the season out of shape. There were questions about whether or not what was going to happen with him, as you mentioned, the healthy scratch. And he was missing for the first six games of that series. Something happened in the third period of that Leafs game, of game seven.
And he was like that last night again.
Sure.
Now, John did provide actually a very good segue that you just killed, Mike.
Whoa,
at least the Lucic point was a very good one. But I did want to move on to the Ottawa Senators because there is actually one game being played tonight with game two of the Senators and Penguins.
I can kill that too,
Well, I'm sure you could. You can kill a lot of things, I'm sure.
And have.
Maybe we should talk about you in a rash drinking margaritas again.
Killing those margaritas, that's right, yeah.
Well, what does Ottawa have to do to bounce back in game two against the Penguins, who looked dominant, especially on the power play in that first game?
Well, I think their special teams have to be a lot better. I think two or three of the Penguins' goals came on the power play, which when you look at the cachet of talent they can throw out on the power play is not bad. But, you look after the game, Craig Anderson is saying, you know what, I need to be better. And I'm just shaking my head going, this guy's already got a cape and a big S on his chest. I don't know what more he has to do. If you're just talking from a pure talent standpoint, I really don't know what they can do if Pittsburgh plays up to their potential.
One of the key things for the Penguins, not only is their power play good, their penalty kill is good. So I'm not even sure special teams, if the Senators can break even on special teams, that might be a bonus. 5-on-5 is where they're going to have to try to win the game. And in many ways, they have to be a ton more aggressive without taking stupid penalties. And that's difficult to do, particularly at games in Pittsburgh, where, there is a little bit of a hometown judgment at times when in every officiating situation. That's not to say that they're influenced, but, in many ways, the home team does get a little bit of a preference at times. And I just think that guys like Chris Neal have to be a little more aggressive without being stupid. And the sad thing was in game one, it was Corey Conacher that was being aggressive and stupid. I mean, what is Corey Conacher right. had as many penalties in game one as he had all season for the Senators. That shouldn't be the case. They have to be aggressive. They have to go to the line and then not cross it. Nothing will surprise me about the Ottawa Senators.
No.
If they come out and play a competitive game tonight and win, I will not be shocked just based on the season that they've had and how they've endured some really difficult situations.
You talk about a well-coached team.
Oh.
Yeah.
the Ottawa Senators, the job Paul McLean has done with the injuries that have been there, and it's remarkable. And what I like the most about the Senators team is if you play well, you play. It doesn't matter what your salary is. It doesn't matter when you were taken in the draft. It's based on merit. And Daniel Alfredson's bought into it, and so the rest of the room's bought into it, and they are on board with Brandon Prust's buddy.
It's incredible. And, you know, today, guys, obviously the Jack Adams finalists were named. Bruce Boudreau from Anaheim, Joel Quenneville from Chicago, and obviously McLean in Ottawa. And you know what? I mean, I have the utmost respect for the jobs that Bruce and Joel Quenneville did, but, I mean, a lot of us so-called prognosticators or so-called experts before the season.
They were down and out. They were going to be one of the worst.
Some people had them picked as the worst team in the National Hockey League, and I think that has to play into this. I just think McLean's done a heck of a job and a better job than any of us could have predicted.
Arash touched on one person that really is the cornerstone of the organization, and that's Daniel Alfredson.
Yeah.
And you guys have both seen him play this season when, at 40 years old, he's got the most competitive drive of anybody on the ice.
Yeah.
The 19-year-olds, the 20-year-olds, the 23-year-olds, the toughest guy and the guy that hates losing more than anybody is Daniel Alfredson.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I remember one game here in Toronto. They're down 5-1, and Alfredson refuses to give up. And next thing you know, it's 5-4.
Right.
And you're going, well, and it wasn't Erik Karlsson. It wasn't one of their kids. It was Daniel Alfredson driving the boat. And that's, I do think we need to see more out of him tonight, because I didn't see that much out of him on Wednesday night. And I think that's a factor as well.
And the one thing Alfredson knows, the Senators have never won a series when they've been down 0-2. Pittsburgh's won their last five when they've been up 2-0. Big one tonight.
Yeah, you're talking about a veteran player and his presence on the ice, and Alfredson. On the flip side for Pittsburgh, what about what Jerome Iginla has done to this point, with point per game so far in the postseason?
Yep.
Obviously contributing and you know, paying dividends for the price that Pittsburgh paid in going out to get him at the deadline.
Well, I just think that Jerome fits in there. I mean, with that cast, who wouldn't? Because he doesn't have to be the man.
Exactly.
He doesn't have to be the number two guy. He doesn't even have to be the number three guy on that team. And I think that at this point in his career, that suits his skill set perfectly.
Interesting to note that in halfway through game one, they moved Iginla off of Crosby's line, put Dupuis and Kunitz back on it. And this morning in practice, Iginla was with Neil and Malkin on the second line again. You know what? Mike's absolutely right. He's now gone from being the face of a franchise to simply a role player, wanting to do his job, contributing. No question is he's contributing. You have to wonder at a certain point, though, when does this game become too fast for him? And every time it becomes too fast for him, even in these playoffs, you wonder, does he get knocked down a peg and ends up being on the third line with Brendan Morrow?
But if he's okay with that, think of the depth you have.
Well, I mean, at the age of 34 or 35, an opportunity to play with the greatest player in the game and win a Stanley Cup, I'd be okay with
and
that.
And your second real chance at a cup.
Yes.
By the way, must be nice when your second line is Malkin, Neil, and Iginla.
Well, actually, the other story is Chris Letang's. There's a chance Letang won't play tonight, and so they've moved Malkin back to the point with Paul Martin, and they still have Iginla, Neil, and Crosby on the power play. So it might be not as effective.
I think the one series we didn't touch on much: Chicago, Detroit. Chicago manhandled the Red Wings in the first game. Are we expecting anything different over the course of the series, or is this, have you already penciled in Chicago to advance, do you think, John?
I probably have penciled Chicago in, but I would tell you that Detroit will win its share. I don't know how yet, but Mike Babcock, you got to give him credit. He has plans. And I don't, you know, you can argue that usually the team with the best player has a chance to win, and that's Pavel. In my opinion, as good as Kane and Taves and all those guys are in Chicago, Pavel Datsyuk is the best player. And so all of a sudden it becomes the pressure on the Red Wing defense and whether they can actually manage all those Blackhawk forwards.
Where has Patrick Kane been?
Actually, in the first round against Minnesota, he was pretty good setting plays up, but he wasn't scoring goals.
Joel Quenneville will sit here and tell you that out of, and we talked with Eddie about this yesterday, because he, and I actually got Eddie to laugh. Of the six games they played, how many periods do you think Joel thinks the team has played well? And I think he probably had it at one period.
Yeah.
Although he thinks they played very well the last two periods against in game one against the Red Wings.
Well, you talk about Kane that way, but one of the guys that's kind of come in and taken some of the offensive pressure off him is Patrick Sharp, who was hurt up until the last week or two of the season. But he's really answered the bell, and I think that is one of the strengths of the Chicago Blackhawks is the amount of offensive depth that they can produce every night.
I think we've done enough on the Stanley Cup playoffs. Have we
never
not?
Enough.
Well, it's never enough, but is there anything that we didn't touch
Eric,
on?
Eric, you're the captain of the ship, Eric.
No, I'm looking at you.
You're getting a little crusty, and so that's usually
well,
what the
I'm
guy...
I'm doing my best Bob McCowan.
That's what I know. That's what the guy in that chair does. You're getting crusty, and you're and all you hockey.
When Joe Coburn's on his skates, which NBA player does he... height does he reach?
LeBron.
Okay.
Oh, okay. All right. Now you're speaking my language. How about the Toronto Blue Jays? Four-game winning streak going into New York. Big series against the East leading Yankees starts with the first pitch in, just about an hour or so, roughly, from Yankee Stadium. We will talk about the Jays and if this is the series that maybe continues to ignite them in a potential turnaround. It's got to happen at some point if it's ever going to happen this season. That is on tap next on the Friday Roundtable, Primetime Sports. Eric Smith in for Bob McCowan on the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet. Welcome back to Primetime Sports on the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet. Eric Smith in for Bob McCowan. Awful bumper. Good song, just tough to come in on, because you got to wait for the organ forever. I know it's only on radio, but the radio listeners right now are like, are we going to go now?
Don't say a word. Let's let Eric bury himself.
I'm not burying myself. I'm quite happy here. I'm
you're the only one with headphones on. We have no idea
well,
what
know,
you're talking about.
You guys talked about 2 minutes over the break that we were supposed to take, and I'm the one that
no,
got
you're
the
in charge.
No,
you're the captain.
No.
You're Captain Krusty right that chair.
I stay with my mates. I go down with the ship.
You wear the seat just
until
like Tony Romo
throwing them under the bus in the second hour.
Oh, absolutely. When the boss says, "Hey, it was his fault." His fault is Mike Zeisberger, Rash Madani, John Shannon. The Toronto Blue Jays, four-game winning streak as they head into New York for the first pitch of the first game of the series this weekend against the Yankees. Oh, by the way, the division-leading Yankees, who, going back to what you were saying, Mike, about the Ottawa Senators in the National Hockey League, many expected the Yankees not necessarily be the worst team in baseball or in the AL East or the American League, but definitely not the number one team with the Jays sitting in the basement of the division. Is this the series where... you know, four-game win streak, the bats finally seem to be alive, where Arash, the team, finally has to start making that true push and kind of get themselves back closer to that Mendoza line?
Yeah, it's we're at the point, I know there's 120 games left, but every series is now becoming critical. And that's what happens when you put yourself in the hole that the Blue Jays did. But it's not just this one with the Yankees. You come back right after, Tampa's at home, Baltimore's at home. You have a stretch right here where... If you want to talk about being a 500 ball club in and around the All-Star break, this is the stretch where they really have to make something happen.
Well, the only thing more shocking that the Yankees have got off to this start with no Jeter, no A-Rod for much of the year, no Granderson.
No Teixeira.
No Teixeira is... the Jays are playing at Yankee Stadium and Madani's not there. Yeah. Like, I mean, we're wondering about that.
And Lyle Overbay's at first base.
And Vernon Wells played second base. Okay. If that doesn't get Girardi the manager of the year right now, I don't know what. And forget about where they're playing. Those guys are hitting.
We haven't confirmed that John McDonald will be the shortstop for the Yankees tonight, but
it's you talk about smoke and mirrors, but somehow that team has done it. And, you know, then you juxtapose it over to the Blue Jays, who, you know, not so long ago, we were all talking in spring training how the odds makers in Vegas had them the favorites for the mm-hmm. World Series. My, what a couple of months can change.
Well, let's remember, it wasn't just the Yankees, too. The Red Sox were supposed to be bad as yeah. well, and mm-hmm. Farrell was supposed to be an incompetent manager. And
funny how those two, the Red Sox two starting pitchers, best pitchers in Buchholz and Lester, faltered when John Farrell wasn't there, and then their old pitching coach comes back, and now they're dominating again.
But don't you think when it comes to the Blue Jays, all they need to do is, you know, and it sounds cliche, but if they just...
Is put up 10 runs a game like they have the last few days?
Well, here, listen, I mean, remember who they did it against. They did it against a National League team in unfamiliar territory. I think that you almost have to throw the interleague game out. The two games against the Giants, I mean, take the two wins and put them away, but don't ever think that the Blue Jays are out of the woodwork just because they beat a Giants team that were they had an. I mean, it's almost like the Giants might have been distracted being in Toronto. I don't know what that means.
Ryan Vogel song is starting to look like the Ryan Vogel song of 4 years ago.
Yeah,
not the Ryan Vogel song of last fall.
But go to Yankee Stadium, try to win this series.
Well, you haven't played well in the last what? They've lost 16 in the last 18. 18.
Yeah. You know, so just chip away, and be .500 by the All-Star break, and then. Then mum's your word. I mean, well, then you got an opportunity.
And the biggest issue right now, Rash, I guess, is the fact that, to John's point, if you want to throw the last two out, the bats have started to turn mm-hmm. around a little bit. You're not going to score 10 a game, but guys are starting to hit more. So the offense is coming, but is the pitching going to come? Because it hasn't to this point, even through some of these wins over the last four. Granted, Dickey had a fine performance, but, I mean, man, the pitching has got to start picking up if this team's going to have any chance.
You also need some healthy arms. I mean, the pitching's got to pick up, but Josh Johnson's on the DL.
Right.
Jay Happ's on the DL. Ricky Romero.
No, you can't bring him up because he hasn't been here all year. He's only been here for 10 minutes.
Who's that?
Romero.
I'm saying Ricky Romero is going to be nowhere near this ball club until who knows when. So now, did we see Mark Burley kind of turn the corner in his last two starts, especially in Boston? Perhaps. Right. Yeah. Has R.A. Dickey, who says he's now pain-free, becoming maybe not quite the R.A. Dickey of last year, but a guy who can be a reliable guy, perhaps. But they're still, as a staff, not there. They got away with Ramon Ortiz the other night. And that the Blue Jays just have to tread water until they get healthy from a pitching standpoint. The good news is that bullpen is fresh. I mean, Jansen hasn't pitched since last weekend. A lot of those arms back there are pretty fresh. That's critical for them right now going into this stretch of division games.
Burley tonight, I mean, it'll be a good indication. Again, you talked about Burley pitching so well in Boston. Burley tonight at Yankee Stadium, that will be an interesting night for him and for this organization to see if this truly is, you know, an opportunity for them to get over the hump. I mean, we've talked
his especially, last start was very good.
Well, especially in New York, because Burley has one career win in New York. His ERA is over six. He hasn't had a win there since 2006.
We've also talked at least a half a dozen times of turning points this season already. Well, you know, was this play a turning point? Was that game a turning point? And you have to think when you're 7-3 in your last 10 games that you're closer to a turning point than you were at any other time during the season.
The turning point of this season will come, sorry, Zayas, just real quick, when Jose Reyes returns, if they're a team that's in and around .500. That's when the turning point of the season will come. If they're not, forget it.
Well, you know, you mentioned...
I can cancel my season tickets?
You can cancel your World Series
plans. Okay.
Like you did with your Raptors ones.
That's right. Right.
But you guys talk about hitting and pitching. The thing that's distressed me the most when I watch this team in the first month and a half is the mental mistakes and the defensive mistakes, because we had a team in here, granted they had great pitching, but the San Francisco Giants, okay, who have won two of the past three World Series. I would challenge anybody to tell me that, you know, when all was said and done, that the San Francisco Giants were one of the top six most talented teams in Major League Baseball in either of those years. But they always did the little things. They moved runners over.
Right.
They never threw to the wrong base. We saw a game in Baltimore where a guy threw to the wrong base and erroneously mm-hmm. that cost the Blue Jays a game. We've seen a game where they didn't know how many outs there were. And these are the little things that distress me more than anything, because you always go back to the guy in Bull Durham where he throws the bats in the shower after Kevin Costner tells him, get angry, they're right. kids. And he said, it's a simple game, okay? You hit the ball, you throw the ball, you catch the ball. And too many times, they're not catching the ball.
It's funny, Colby Rasmus said, I was talking to him this week before the second Giants game, so Wednesday. He said, we were so tight and we were pressing so hard, we couldn't think straight. And Mark DeRosa, who's been around championship teams, winning teams, losing teams, said we were walking around eggshells. No, you know, it said it's taken a while for us to find our way and a lot of turnover. Now, this is all well and good when you're 7-3 in your last 10 and these are the things you want to say. But I thought those were two interesting things that the guys told me this week.
Two names that have come up in the last couple of minutes. Reyes apparently joined the team in New York today. Not that he's anywhere close to getting on the field, but at least he's in the clubhouse and he's around the team. Also, we talked about Romero. Well, speaking of Buffalo, again, not that this guy is a solution to any of the issues, but good to hear, I suppose, for Dustin McGowan that he has actually moved up from single-A Dunedin to Buffalo. So he continues to attempt a comeback if he can after three of the last 4 years.
He just can't count on that guy for anything.
Well, he'd be coming out of the pen, I would assume, at this point anyways, if he was anything. But seeing as Reyes was brought up, until he comes back, can the Jays tread water, as we talk about, with the way it's gone, especially up the middle? They've got issues all over the place.
Yeah, and up the middle, but to me, defensively is the biggest. I mean, you have Bonifacio, Asturias, and Kawasaki, and that it's cost them a couple of games, and I think it's going to cost them another couple of games at some point with some defensive miscues. And at the time when they brought Kawasaki, they had looked elsewhere, and the price was just too high to go get somebody, especially when it was going to be effectively a two-month rental. Well, that time is now shrunk, and I don't want to say they've gotten away with it because they haven't, but at this point, I don't know if you can go make a move.
But do you have any doubt that they can be .500 by All-Star?
I mean, I have doubts. They could and they couldn't. I mean, it's fundamentally going to come down to pitching. And at this point, with this rotation, okay, Morrow's going to be healthy. He's going to pitch this weekend finally. And Dickey and Burley look like they're coming around. But your 4 and 5 starters are still right now a question mark. With Johnson said he didn't even think he was going to miss a start initially, and now you know he's been on the DL and there's no real update on when he's going to come back.
And arguably, you could say he has the best arm out of all of them.
Right,
he was the guy that
with the most to prove.
Yeah, and in terms of the pitchers that came over, even though Dickey's got the track record, the Cy Young, the knuckleball, but it seemed that there was the most excitement in spring training was that a lot of the people that, you know, media and that saw Johnson firsthand and his stuff, there was a heck of a buzz in spring training about just what this kid's upside could be.
A career power pitcher who's added more stuff, who's playing for a contract, and just saw Zach Greinke to get that kind of money. It was set up for him to be, you know, to have a lights out season. It just hasn't worked out that way.
Burley and Kuroda coming up in about 25 minutes on most of these Sportsnet radio network stations and on Sportsnet as well. The roundtable will continue in moments again on the Sportsnet radio network, simulcast on Sportsnet. Welcome back to Primetime Sports on the Sportsnet radio network, simulcast on Sportsnet. Eric Smith in for Bob McCowan, Mike Zeisberger of the Toronto Sun, Arash Madani from Sportsnet, John Shannon of Sportsnet. Jays and Yankees coming up just after 7 o'clock. Also, game 2 tonight for the Penguins and Senators. And I will do
Don't
my best.
Don't forget the Memorial Cup on Sportsnet as well.
The MasterCard.
MasterCard Memorial Cup.
Sorry, it slipped my mind.
London versus Saskatoon tonight, the first game of the MasterCard Memorial Cup.
How nuts will that building be tonight, huh?
I hope it's
You nuts. Guys go ahead and talk about this.
Well, you don't like junior hockey? It's kind of like March Madness. I mean, March Madness.
Not at all.
John.
Listen, when
no,
you
because
can,
the teams in March Madness, they can leave after 1 year.
when you consider that Jonathan Drouin and Nathan MacKinnon and Seth Jones are all there, it is going to be a great
and
tournament.
Max Domi.
When is
and
Bob
Max
coming Domi. Back?
Oh, Eric, I thought you mean 10 minutes ago you're saying you liked hockey. Now you don't want to talk hockey. Come on.
We'll talk
you can't
Trey Burke.
Pick and
we'll have our own Trey Burke conversation.
Yeah, you guys talk like this. We'll talk like that. And we're good to go.
You don't like hockey?
Well, here's another one. This is going to be my true Bob McCowan then.
Okay.
All right, let's talk about what happened to Team Canada Day, another hockey event that I don't particularly care about.
Well, I tell you what, the biggest concern I think everybody has out of the World Hockey Championships is what happened to Eric Staal.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, he got low-bridged by Alex Edler, the Vancouver Canucks, and Canada lost for the fourth time in a row in the quarterfinal, and the Carolina Hurricanes lost a player for who knows how long.
And it looked terrible, too. I mean, he was writhing around like a fish out of water. That looked awful. Just felt for him. The pain just on his face instantly excruciating.
He will be back in Raleigh for an MRI tomorrow. But I'll tell you what, when you consider how bad the season was for the Hurricanes, for them to consider that they may start the season without Eric Staal next year, that would be another huge blow for Rutherford and Kirk Muller.
At what point do teams, and I mean, it seems like it comes up quite a bit in the NBA and around Olympic time, no doubt, in all sports. But when will teams, I mean, does Carolina maybe kind of jump the gun on this now and say, hold on a second, we've got to reevaluate whether we're allowing guys to play in this tournament, let alone especially even playoff teams too, eliminated and instantly guys are going over to that?
I think it's a huge question, a huge issue. But when you also consider, Eric, that you know, amongst these NHL lives of these players, they have created from the time they were 16 years old a Hockey Canada life. And they have created a loyalty to the Hockey Canada brand in so many ways, whether it's the under 16, the under 17, the World Juniors. And so all of a sudden, when Hockey Canada calls you, you go.
Plus, you know, you can't, and maybe it's not such a factor for Eric Staal, but for guys like a Matt Duchene, a Taylor Hall, a Jordan Everly, Steve Yzerman has made it clear that some of these kids coming over here, this is an audition or part of an audition for the Olympic team. So, you know what? If guys say no, that gets taken into account.
And, John, it's a great time. Those boys love going over there.
Oh, yeah. What do you mean by that, Arash?
Well, you're talking about wineries in Kelowna?
Yeah. There are a few. I mean,
Have you ever been to Cafe Opry in downtown Stockholm? And you know what we speak of.
Stockholm is one of the great cities. And it's no coincidence that the IIHF has had more championship series and tournaments in Stockholm than anywhere else in the world, because it's just a great place to go.
Does it matter in the grand scheme as far as Canada goes, that as you talked about in the commercial break, that it's four straight years on the outside looking in now, that they haven't had success in this tournament?
Well, I think it's a concern if you're Hockey Canada. I think it's a concern. But I think you have to also say what is more important to you and what is more important to Canadians? Is it winning the Stanley Cup and seeing your team win the Stanley Cup, or win the World Hockey Championships that run parallel to the Stanley Cup Championship? That, to me,
or win Olympic gold and not.
Well, but that's different because we stop. The NHL stops.
Yeah. No, but how many people are as interested in this?
Well, I mean, the ratings will prove that they're not that interested. But at the same time, as soon as the Maple Leafs were eliminated, I guarantee you that there was a little more interest in the World Hockey Championship team for one day in Southern Ontario than there was a week ago.
And other countries, a lot of the European countries pay a lot more attention to it than we do, kind of in the way that the World Juniors, we pay far more publicity and attention to it than a lot of the European countries.
That's a really good point. You know, Canada has invented in many ways and rejuvenated on timeless occasions what the Federation calls the under 20 tournament, the World Junior Hockey Championships. And simply because it's become a huge revenue generator for the network that airs it and for Hockey Canada. And it's become a driving force of being able to run programs of minor hockey all across Canada for 365 days. The World Hockey Championships is a little bit different. But at the same time, you know, it's one of those tournaments when we lose, we don't care.
Right.
But when we win, it's just one of those days you can actually brag a little bit more. So it's not that important. It's only important when we win.
A lot of people say they don't care, but they all remember when Rick Nash carried that guy on his back like a jockey and scored one of the great goals. I would have to say one of the top 10, 15 goals that I've ever seen.
Yeah. To me, the World Hockey Championships are always a win-win. You know, if we don't win, we don't care. And if we do win, we care. You know, why
it's not,
not
a bad deal.
Well, no, and because we're paying attention to the other tournament more anyway.
Right.
So just enjoy this for what it is, and you're right. Let the boys have some fun in Europe.
And that tournament's the Stanley Cup playoffs. not the NHL playoffs.
That is an excellent point, Raj. I am glad you listened. It is really a blessing that somebody's been listening to me today.
Well, and of course, more people, as you said, in Southern Ontario that are watching the IIHF as opposed to having to support the Ottawa Senators, because nobody in Toronto wants to do that. Nobody in Canada is rallying behind Ottawa, right?
When the ratings went from 5.1 million for Game 7 to 1.7 million for Game 1 of Ottawa-Pittsburgh, I think you know where the
like people in Toronto were cheering for Vancouver a couple years ago. Nobody's cheering for Ottawa.
People in Toronto were cheering for
People cheering for Vancouver.
They were cheering for Boston.
I think people kind of accepted Vancouver a little bit as a Canadian team, but it ain't happening well, I don't know. But anyway,
You're right.
Appreciate the time. Mike, Arash, thank you. Hopefully the Bobcat is back on Monday. Eric Smith in for Bob McCown. It's been Primetime Sports on the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet.